Hello, I'm Rosie. I'm the radio coordinator at Distorted, and I'm on a quest to find out about the ins and outs of all the jobs in the music industry. Today, I'm chatting to Jasmine Igo, artist manager at 360. We speak about what it takes to be an artist manager, as well as the importance of people skills, organisation, and problem solving. Jasmine also shares her experience as a female navigating the field and building up her confidence in high-level discussions. Hope you enjoy.
You know, if something does go wrong or if something is missed, just learn from those mistakes. As long as you don't do it in the future, I think sometimes people have got to make mistakes to know what not to do. We need something to pop off on TikTok. And it's like, firstly, you can't create a viral moment. I think if something's going to become viral, it happens organically and it happens on its own accord.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, good. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. So I always start off these chats by asking why you decided to choose a career in the music industry.
Yeah, I didn't really. Okay. I think that's probably quite a roundabout answer, to be honest. I mean, I started working in music quite a while ago. When I was about 19. I originally didn't want to work in the industry whatsoever. I actually wanted to go to drama school off the back of college and auditioned. A lot of people would probably say, now everything makes sense, because they'd probably say I'm quite dramatic, but didn't want to go. Like, it was never a thing for me. I didn't even really know that it could exist, to be honest. But auditioned for drama school, wanted to do that. That was the path that, you know, I wanted to go down. But then, you know, a couple of years went by. I was really involved in my local music scene where I'm from in Reading. Mm-hmm. And putting on like gigs, and you know, a lot of my friends were in bands and whatnot. So I got a little bit of a taste of what music could be like, mainly through the live side, to be honest. And one of the bands that I was friends with, they got me an internship with their management company, and it all started from there, to be honest. It wasn't really a conscious thing, but
yeah. Were they an indie band or?
They were, yeah. So shout out Sandara Karma.
That's interesting, because a lot of people that want to get into electronic music, like, well, I'm quite an indie girl. I love indie music, and I work for a company that's an electronic music company. And I think a lot of people think it's different, but it's the exact same principle.
100%. I think the way that you've, you know, teeing up records, pushing records, the same ethos that you have to have is exactly the same across the industry, no matter what genre you work in. I mean, I wasn't into dance music at all at that time. I was way more into my bands, and like guitar music was definitely the thing for me. And that was kind of, you know, what I grew up on, and that's what all of my friends were interested in. I also do think that it's a bit of a shift, well, especially like between me and my friends, it was a bit of a shift that happened, where we were all super into our bands, and then we started delving into dance music a little bit, and now everybody's, you know, fully invested in it. I've got people that work in the industry, friends from back then that work in the industry. I've got friends that are DJs, friends that are running their own labels. So it's interesting how everybody started there, but yeah, we all end up in dance music at some stage.
Yeah, so you were interning at this management company, and then what happened?
I was. So yeah, I was interning at their management company for a couple of years, commuting from Reading to Hackney 4 days a week, which was an absolute killer.
Oh yeah, how long's that commute?
Too long, too long. where I am now, where the office is now in West London, it's amazing. But that was a bit of a killer. But yeah, so I was working for that management company for a little bit, was learning the ropes, and more so, you know, shadowing people. Just being around people and just hearing the conversations and whatnot that they were having on the phone, like the way that they'd go about doing business, the things that they would be doing, the way that they spoke to artists, I think was, you know, super, super valuable for me at that age. But then after that, decided I wanted to move to London. I think as everybody does at some point in their life, you get yourself a pub job to keep the money coming in.
Yeah.
and try and fund, you know, try and fund your social life. And then I was stuck in a bit of a stage where I was off the back of that internship. I was then, you know, working in pubs, moved to London to try and get by, constantly applying for jobs. I was applying for so many jobs.
Within the industry, yeah.
All within the industry, but just so varied. Mm-hmm. So varied. I think management was definitely a focus for me because I'd had a bit of an insight into that already. But I was literally doing anything. Yeah. I was like, whether it be like the live side, whether it be like, you know, agent side, absolutely everything that I was applying for. And I think it's quite difficult sometimes because it's almost like people want you to have a bit of experience to be able to get the job in the first place. But it's like, how am I meant to get the experience if I can't get the job? You know, it's all like a little bit chicken and egg, but yeah. Eventually applied. And then, yeah, now I've been at 360 for the past 5 years or so.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I always think as well, it's quite difficult to get experience and work experience, especially probably in London, that's paid. I know I did a lot of internships that weren't paid, and then you have to then get a job that is paid just to make ends meet. But exactly. Then that's difficult to learn and to be fully invested in a job.
And that's what happened in the break for me. That first internship, you know, travel and everything was covered, but it was an unpaid internship. So it wasn't feasible, and it definitely wasn't long term. And it's, you know, looking back on it now, I wouldn't say I was like pushed to look into manage stuff off my own back, but it was definitely something from the very beginning. And I know I look back on it and I think, shit, I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. I was learning a little bit on the job, but I knew nothing. And I was being pushed into a place where, you know, you could take on your own acts. And I was like, thank God I didn't, because I would just have been wasting everybody's time. So I definitely didn't know as much as I needed to at that point, I don't think. Yeah. But yeah, then obviously we're fast forward a few years and now we're here.
Yes. So you are an artist manager at 360. And what does your day-to-day look like as an artist manager?
It can vary so much day-to-day. You know, sometimes you can be on shoots with artists, you're at the office, sometimes you're in the office, sometimes you're on calls all of the time speaking to all of these other teams. It completely varies. I mean, a perk of the job also is going to shows and networking and meeting people. I think it ties into a little bit of, you know, what a manager actually does and what our role is, because that is completely dependent day to day on, you know, on what you'll spend your time doing.
Yeah.
So the way that I explain it to people, well, you know, like parents, for example, I still don't think my parents actually know what I do.
I'm like that with my family.
I know, but it is. They see me post things on Instagram, and then, you know, if I'm like, oh, I've got to go here or here, they're like, why? I don't think they fully grasp it. But the way that I try and explain it to people is that if you've got the manager here, the artist here, you've then got the manager, an outer layer to that. And then on the outside of that, you've then got all of your other teams. So you've then got your live agents, you've got your radio pluggers, you've got, you know, all of these different teams that you've got around the artist. But obviously, if an artist didn't have a manager, they would have to be speaking to all of those teams all the time. They'd have to be pushing all of those teams. They'd have to be, you know, our job is basically to take everything else away from the artist so they could just focus on making music and doing what they do best.
Yeah.
Some artists like to be more involved in things than others, but, you know, as a blanket rule, that's our job, really. So sometimes I could be, you know, meeting radio teams, having meetings with labels, setting up a release, like speaking to directors about video shoots, you know, going into YouTube offices and pitching, you know, a new release that we've got. It, like, the day-to-day can vary loads.
Yeah, and you're the main point of contact for the artist then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, some managers can come in and say, you know, you should do this, you should do that, like, that's where you should be going. And yeah, there is kind of an element of that, and we'll always give our two pence on stuff, but really it's working together with the artist to find out that common goal and say, you know, in 5 years' time, I want to have a release that is this big, I want to be here, I want to be playing these shows. Okay, so how do we then work back from that, and then what steps do we need to make in order to get there. All we want is our artists to succeed. I think, you know, as long as you're on the same team, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and would you say that you do quite a lot of decision making in your role?
Yeah, there is quite a lot of that. I think, again, it can completely vary artist to artist, and some really do like to be involved in every decision that happens, whereas some are happy to take a little bit of a step back and say, you know, like, I trust you guys, I'll leave this with you. Whether that be, I don't know, in terms of live show offers or what dates we should be releasing said tracks on, I think we'll always give our expertise and always like give our opinions on something. But to be honest, I'm quite a firm believer is that it should always be an artist's decision. Like, nobody else should influence that for their own agenda. We just work together with them, offer advice, and then come to a, you know, a final, hopefully shared conclusion.
Yeah. So I suppose your relationship with your artist as well is probably one of the key things as a manager, having a great relationship with them and communicating with them.
Totally. You literally spend way more time speaking to your artist than you do your own family. it's crazy. I think so. I probably know more about some of them than I do, you know, my own sibling, to be honest. But you do, and that's why it's so, you know, when you first start talking to an act about taking them on at the beginning stage of the management, it's, if I am speaking to somebody, I say to them, look, you know, our credentials and what we've got to offer is one thing, but really you've also got to get on as people, because if you don't, you're like the rest of your career is going to be absolute hell. And then it just won't end well at all. Like I said, because you're so close to them. So I think it's really, really important. You have got to be quite personable, I think, if you've got to be an artist manager, because also you're dealing with all different types of people and, you know, with different wants and needs. So you've got to learn to adapt.
Yeah, exactly. And do you think it's a 24/7 job role, or do you have chance to switch off when you can?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the acts on our roster are kind of pretty good when it comes to the evening, and, you know, because obviously they want their time as much as we want. We're ready and happy to jump in on things as much as we can. I think, you know, generally it can be quite 24/7, but like I said, we're quite lucky. They're quite respectful of our time, as we are of theirs.
Yeah.
So yeah, it completely depends. But obviously, sometimes in this job, you will get the days where, you know, either something will go wrong or something needs to be figuring out, or you've got an artist that's on the other side of the world and their flight's cancelled and they can't get to the show, and then you've got to speak to promoters at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, it happens rarely, but it's always a possibility.
What's the favourite thing about what you do as an artist manager? Why do you love it so much?
I think the main thing, to be honest, and the reason why, well, obviously I fell into it a little bit at the beginning, but the reason why I'm then so happy that I then got back into it in this role as well is that really you are the closest to the artist. You've got all of these other teams, and we do encourage our artists to have relationships with their label and their radio pluggers and their live agent, because sometimes it can be super, super contrived and super closed off. We're totally happy and supportive for them to do that. But I think fundamentally, being the closest person to the artist, you can really see the difference you can make. I think it's just clearer to see because you've got an all-rounding picture of their business as a whole. So definitely being the closest to the artist, I think, is a big draw. Yeah. I think, you know, people as management are into different things, and their strengths lie in different places. Like, I was always super creative, like, growing up, and was really into, like, my photography and, like, short films and stuff. Although if I look back on them now, they'd probably be absolutely awful. But I was, like, massively into that stuff. So I really enjoy, like, doing the creative in a campaign and, like, with videos and artwork and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, whereas other managers don't.
Yeah, it's a lot of transferable skills from your past and what you've done. It's like drama as well. In your people skills and your talking and things like that.
Yeah.
It's all really important.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also with that, it's just, I think confidence is a big thing. I think especially, you know, at the beginning, it can be quite daunting, you know, especially as a female, to be honest, it can be quite daunting when you go into a boardroom, right? And you're like sitting down for a planning meeting with this artist, especially in the early stages, if you're quite, you know, junior. And it's like all these people are speaking and it's like, okay, do I speak now? Or like, and then you're rehearsing things to say in your head and it's, you know, it can be quite daunting. But I think having that confidence just to go in and assert, obviously there's a very fine line,
yeah.
but having the confidence to go in and insert yourself in, you know, into a conversation at the right time, I think is really important. So yeah, you're totally right. Something like that can be really easily transferred.
And what is the most challenging thing? I know you just spoke about being a female in the industry, which, to be honest, is not something that we've gone fully into on the podcast, because it's a massive, whole big topic, in my opinion, that probably could take like 5 hours. But would you say that was a challenge being in the industry?
To be honest, I think it was more so a challenge at the beginning for me, just because of that exact, you know, point about, especially when you are junior and, you know, you're not sure when to speak up or when not to. And like I said, it's daunting if you go into a room and you're like one of the only females in there. I think, to be honest, it's 100%, I still think is a problem. And there have been times where maybe I feel like I've been overlooked a little bit, and they've got people just speak to the seniors instead of, you know, including me in a conversation. Or, you know, for example, there was one time that we were going to a meeting and it was almost just like I was the one, you know, organizing the times for the meeting, almost like I was working as a PA, not somebody who was there that actually had something to say. So I think more so around then. I'm super lucky though, I think, whereas I've actually got quite a lot of supportive male figures in the industry around me, who have also, always made a big thing about, you know, my voice being heard, and, you know, I've been really supportive in that sense. So, and I think, you know, just working with the teams that do, there's some labels have got teams. Well, I was on a call, jumping around all over the place here, but I was on a call for a release that we've got coming out for one of our artists last week, and the team was all female, and it was just me and my boss Phil was like the only guy on the call. And I was like, this is great.
A change. I had a similar experience like that in Amsterdam. We were talking to one of our clients' teams and I looked around and I was thinking, we're all female. That never happens.
Totally.
A nice thing, but It's nice having a supportive collection of males around you as well. That's the same at Distorted, how I feel. So again, I don't feel like I've got a lot to say too much on the female thing because I feel quite supported, but I know I know exactly what you mean about when you're starting out, it can be really daunting, and it is all about getting your voice out there and actually getting people to listen to you.
For sure. But also that's something that does come in time. You know, if you're like in a junior position, you go into a meeting, you're not going to be saying, you know, all of these things because you're still learning at the end of the day. And sometimes I think there's a lot of value in sitting back and just listening and taking everything in. And that's how I've done a fair bit of my learning, to be honest, and just listening to, you know, okay, so what did they say in that situation? How would they deal with this? What questions would they ask? And sitting back and listening to that. And then I then find myself repeating things that others around me have said, and I'm like, oh, I know where I got that from.
So we spoke about having good relationships, good people skills, confidence, decision making and all them things. But is there anything else that you think that someone who was wanting to start out in artist management, the traits that they should possess, is there anything else that we could add to that list?
I think you've got to be organized is a big thing. With management, you're going to have a million and one plates spinning at once. If you think about, you know, just for one artist, how much goes on, like I was talking about with all the different teams and having to do X, Y, and Z, and you've got to think about so much. So good organisational skills. I know that's such like an umbrella term and everybody says that, but God, you really need it in this job. Because also, you know, if things, human error is one thing, that's totally fine. I also think it's fine for people to, you know, if something does go wrong or if something is missed, just learn from those mistakes. you know, don't try and hide them. Hold your hands up. Like, I've done stuff when I was starting out, and like, hopefully I wouldn't do it now, but things that have been missed and I've held my hands up and I've said, do you know what? That's on me. I didn't do X, Y, and Z. As long as you don't do it in the future, I think sometimes people have got to make mistakes to know what not to do.
Yeah.
And it's all like a bit of a learning curve, but good organizational skills. Yeah, the ability to problem solve, I think, is huge. Because like I said, things will go wrong. You're dealing with people, you're relying on other people quite a lot of the time, and things will go wrong. So problem solving, 100%. What else? I think, yeah, just being personable to other people and having a bit of a get up and go attitude. Like, you're going to be in control of, you know, your own workload. Sometimes when you get to a certain point, you'll have to actually go out and find yourself all of these opportunities. They're not just going to fall on your lap every single time. Yeah. So you've got to have that get up and go to go out there and find stuff for yourself. But I'm probably making everything sound much harder than it actually is. Like, look, artist management isn't rocket science, but you've definitely got to possess some of those skills to be good at it, I think.
I think as maybe just to give some context as well. So I deal with you and Frankie Watt because you got a show with us, but how many other artists do you deal with on a day or manage on a daily basis?
Four or five.
Yeah, that is a lot though. For, and you just said about organisation.
Yeah.
You definitely need to be organised if you've got four artists on your roster.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, you think sometimes that, you know, the workload for one is a lot. And don't get me wrong, the workload can go in waves. When you get into a cycle, a release cycle with an artist, obviously there is more work to be done. There will be times where they want a bit of downtime and they're not producing and they're taking a couple of months off, et cetera, et cetera. So it does come in waves. But yeah, 100, there will always be a million and one plates spinning. So just pre-warning.
Yeah. And just out of my own curiosity, would you say that your relationship with each artist is different, or are you all quite similar?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously, just, you know, obviously, because you mentioned Frankie, just speaking about him in particular, I've got a really great relationship with him and, you know, with all of the management team, really. I think there's just a lot of respect there, which is great. And obviously, I've been working on Frankie since the beginning. So I've seen the rise with him and, you know, been by his side from the big single that we released back during COVID to now. So it's definitely a shared goal with him. But everyone else, I was just using him as an example, but everybody else I've got great relationships with. But sometimes maybe the way that you communicate things can vary artist to artist. And some artists, you know, will like constant messages on WhatsApp every single day and constant updates. Then some artists would prefer just to have a weekly call in the diary and then we can run through everything there. Yeah. It completely depends, but generally the relationship with all of them is great. But like I said, you wouldn't really start working with somebody from the beginning if it, you know, the vibe was off a little bit, because it will just be hell for both of you.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm guessing you established that relationship right at the beginning when you take them on or get moved on to their project or however it goes.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can tell pretty quickly, to be honest, whether you're going to get on as people. It's like, you know, if you meet somebody, like, work aside, if you're down the pub and you meet somebody, you know if, you know, they're a bit of a dick or not.
Yeah.
Right. And it can work both ways, and that's fine. Like, some people just don't click, but having that, you know, that relationship there definitely makes your life a hell of a lot easier.
So the music industry changes quite rapidly, I think, following trends. But if there's one thing right now that you could change about the industry, what would it be?
TikTok.
Discuss.
TikTok, final answer.
Yeah.
But generally, kind of the whole ethos around it, not just TikTok itself. I'm such an avid user of TikTok. I'm a little bit obsessed with it, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I had to put that time limit on because I was spending too much time on it.
So did I. But every time it came off, I just turn it off.
Yeah, okay, cool, carry on.
I was like, no, thank you. I need to get back to watching my, you know, videos of cats or whatever. I was watching. It just was so brain numbing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so maybe not TikTok itself, but the attitude the industry now has because TikTok exists. For example, I think a lot of, you know, a lot of labels are kind of in a hit business. A lot of, and TikTok is seen to be that platform that's like, oh, you know, they're blowing up on TikTok, so they're obviously worth signing. They've got this record, it's blowing up on TikTok, which, yeah, works. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't always translate into streams. And I also don't think there's any huge longevity in an artist if they've got this massive moment on TikTok and their tune absolutely blows off. And, you know, what comes after that? Is that going to be, you know, do they have like lifelong fans that are then going to stay with them? Or is it just going to be a quick, okay, I've watched 30 seconds of your video, I'm going to use your sound for a bit, and then we move on to the next one?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or any other tracks? Have they got any other tracks? Anything else? And sometimes I've read case studies where it's just that one thing, and then, okay, cool, they're signed to this big label, but who are they?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it's just made the industry a little bit lazy, to be honest. I think even when it comes down to, you know, strategy of how we market a record and how, you know, a social plan, for example, something works. Like the amount of times you go into a meeting and it's, oh, TikTok, we need to do TikTok. But it's like, okay, cool, I get that. It's one of the biggest platforms. It's completely, you can't deny that. I don't think you can ignore it. But I think there's such like a blanket, you know, approach that's put onto each artist. And realistically, not everybody's going to be dancing around, you know, making these stupid videos of themselves. And not every artist suits that.
Yeah.
So I think when you tailor it, yeah, it works. But I do think it's made just everything, just social media as a whole, like everything is consumed like so quickly and people are so quick to move on to the next thing. I think it's so much harder these days to actually keep a record going and to keep a record alive. Mm-hmm. And I do think social media and, you know, everybody's kind of like mental spans, like how much they can spend on something has been massively reduced.
Yeah,
because of these platforms.
Yeah, I guess when an artist making a track as well, have you noticed that they're subconsciously thinking, well, that the first 5 seconds of this needs changing because it's not going to catch people's attention? Or do you think that doesn't really matter at the minute?
I think so. I mean, it depends. We've had it more so on streaming, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And we've heard, I mean, streaming, it happens anyway, because, you know, you do radio edits for, you know, people like Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas obviously DJs, when you're working in dance music, a lot of the tracks are 6-7 minutes long, which you don't really want on Spotify. So we more kind of work it with those. But it also depends how invested the artist is in TikTok. To be honest, some of ours are like, no, I'm not going near it. It's not for me. And it's like an ongoing conversation that we have where it's like, you know, you can't completely ignore it. Let's just try and figure out how we work it. But I think, yeah, it's just the laziness of, what should we do? TikTok. We need something to pop off on TikTok. And it's like, firstly, you can't create a viral moment. I think if something's going to become viral, it happens organically and it happens on its own accord. But people try and create these viral moments so much now, and it's just getting so saturated. So I would banish it, apart from me. So I can still use it.
You can watch your video, cats.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah. So I always wrap up these conversations by asking what advice you would give your younger self coming into the industry, knowing what you know now.
Just that everything's going to be all right, but probably,
yeah,
things will work out. I think it's a little bit daunting when you come into it. I think it's also because of the way people perceive it from the outside. And, you know, oh God, like you work in, it's like, for example, the reactions you get with, like, down the pub, and it's like, what do you do for work? I work in music. Everyone's like, oh my God, that's so cool. And it's, yeah, like, yeah, but sometimes I just start replying to emails. Like,
yes,
quite a lot of day to day.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's the perception that it gets. I think that's why it can be so daunting. But I think, yeah, just generally everything will work out. It'll be fine. Just work hard. Keep lots of lists.
Yeah, if you're passionate about it, I think that translates as well, doesn't it?
100%. And you know, some people, I always think there's two kinds of people in the industry. Some, like the people that are massively into their music and started off as fans first before they then got into the industry. And there are just some people who, you know, aren't really that way inclined, but yet all of those skills, like I was saying, that are super organized, that, you know, have everything, can spin all of those million and one plates at once. You've got that side of people too. But I do think having a passion for it first and foremost really does help, because obviously there'll be some days where you'll think, oh God, this is really frustrating me, or, you know, it is your job at the end of the day. But then obviously you'll have other days where you'll think, shit, this is all right. I'm doing something that I'm passionate about.
Yeah. But that's like every job as well, isn't it? So
exactly. You probably have the same days.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I know you're super busy with everything, and like you say, you've got so many plates spinning. So thank you so much for joining. I'm sure everyone will find it very useful and get to know a bit more about artist management as well, which is a great job, I think.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast to catch the next episode. And if you'd like to ask our guests any questions, or if there are any job roles you'd love to learn more about, then get in touch with me via LinkedIn @RosieBlack.